I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Doris Chow is a community organizer doing notable and admirable work in Vancouver's Chinatown. The city is changing, and perhaps nowhere more quickly and arguably unnecessarily than in Chinatown. For years, it suffered the stigma of being considered part of the downtown east side, but it has a unique history that is seeing itself largely abandoned, ignored, and rezoned out of existence. My colleague Jackie Pierre joins me now as we talk to Doris about her work, important work that highlights the rapidity to which this town is willing to do away with history and people in one of Vancouver's oldest neighborhoods. We'll reflect on what's happening in Chinatown, why we need to look at what's happening there, and what the future holds for this neighborhood. Doris is part of an intergenerational group that is doing tremendous work in advocating for the neighborhood. She is the co-founder of the Youth Collaborative for Chinatown, which I'll get her to tell us about. As well, she is a project manager of the Downtown Eastside Kitchen Tables Project. Doris Chow's Twitter handle is at Yen Yen's Kitchen, and the website for more is at SaveChinatownHeritage.org. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in person today, Doris Chow. Ms. Chow, good morning.
Thank you. Hi, nice to be here.
Thanks for joining us, and Jackie, welcome back.
Thank you.
Before Jackie asks her question, just full disclosure for people listening to us, Jackie, Doris, and me, we're all graduates of Sir Charles Tupper Secondary Class of 2000.
Yeah.
The best class.
Like yes. I said, yeah, last month. Very important class.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Doris, I guess we didn't know each other in high school, did we?
Well, not really.
Yeah, sort of. But we have mutual friends who are doubtless listening to us at the moment, sitting on the edge of their sofa wondering if they'll be mentioned.
And telling dirty secrets?
Yes, I promise they will be mentioned. So, yeah.
Give them a shout out.
Yeah.
Now's your moment. So, Doris, just wanted to ask you a couple questions here on what you've been doing. I know you've been really active. So, I guess my first question is, what's wrong with gentrification, and how has it changed Chinatown in the last 10 to 15 years?
I would say, well, what's wrong with gentrification? There's a lot of displacement happening. New businesses, new, more expensive businesses, to be more specific, and condos are coming in, the residents of Chinatown are changing very dramatically. And Chinatown and the Downtown Eastside neighborhood is one of the places where a lot of new immigrants and low-income folks go, because that's where you can find affordable housing traditionally. But now, with the changes that we've seen in the last 10, but even in the past 3 years, it is increasing property taxes, so that it's pricing people out. A lot of businesses are leaving because their rents are going up and they can no longer afford a lot of the low-cost goods that they've been offering. Buildings are being bought up left, right, and center. There's a lot of land speculation as well. And so there's fewer and fewer places for low-income, particularly low-income seniors, Chinese seniors who live in the area, to shop at affordable prices, and housing for them as well. And a lot of the seniors are starting to kind of move away because there's no suitable housing for them starting, because as they're aging, they're not able to age in place. So it's kind of very multi-layered on a daily life, impacting people's daily lives as well as on a higher level. Around businesses and stuff.
You go down Main Street, and it's all construction sites.
Yes.
The last couple of years, and then there's a Starbucks at the corner of Main and Kiefer, and they have the Waves Coffee a block north. A lot of those businesses have displaced, say, the traditional businesses that were there 50-100 years ago. So if this is happening, because, it's happening in all other neighborhoods in the city.
Yep.
What's being lost in Chinatown, I guess you can't replace that, can you?
You can't, yeah. And a lot of people say, why not just go to Richmond? There's lots of Chinese businesses there. But the history that exists in Chinatown is irreplaceable. Chinatown is a symbol of the past discrimination against Chinese Canadians. And that is the important part. You cannot replicate that. You cannot If you go to Richmond, it's a very different feel. You do not have the historic buildings, you do not have the history, and you don't have the community there as well. So if I walk down Chinatown, having been involved in the past few years, and even from just taking my grandmother out before she passed away, but taking her out to restaurants mm-hmm. and everything, we would bump into people all the time, and you hear lots of stories of people just coming to Canada from Hong Kong or China and running into their friends on the street, or my mom running into her high school friend mm-hmm. from, you know, and hadn't seen her in 20 years. That's a common occurrence in Chinatown. Nobody ever does that that never happens in Richmond.
So, I mean, if we have to look for someone to blame for all of this, I mean, you mentioned land speculators. I mean, governments as well have had a hand in all of this, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of, panic. About 10 years ago, there's been a lot of panic as Chinatown really started to decline. I mean, it started roughly in the 80s, but in the 90s and 2000s, it was, you know, very noticeable. The streets were getting a little more quiet and more businesses were leaving. And there was policies that were kind of, you know, tweaked a little.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm referencing the Historic Area Heights Review, in which the allowable heights went up.
And the excuse there was that if we make taller buildings, that's more housing, therefore more social housing. But that really doesn't happen either, does it?
No, and it was actually not even social housing. It was allow the heights to go up so that we can build condos and bring in people or attract people with higher incomes.
Yeah.
Because one of the common perceptions is that because Chinatown is in the downtown east side, we're surrounded by social housing and mm-hmm. and lots of low income folks. They don't have the incomes to purchase anything in the businesses that we want to keep alive. And so why not build condos so that we have warm bodies in the neighborhood, or more warm bodies and with incomes? It's not playing out that way,
yeah.
clearly. And that was about, I think that was 2012 that was passed.
So the other thing, because I saw you on television a few weeks ago with regards to the development at 105 Kiefer, and that's the BD Development Corporation. I guess they want to build something that's tall. Is that right?
Yes.
And so one of the things that they're trying to sell the public on is that with a tall building, there will be social housing. And so your experience with that, that doesn't really happen, does it?
Well, their first in 2014, they came out with their first application, which offered pretty much nothing. No social housing, no amenity space, and I think they were offering maybe some storage. I might be stretching it at that. Maybe some electrical access.
Wi-Fi access.
Yeah, something like that. And it was really, people thought it was insulting. You're mm-hmm. asking for extra height and rezoning and not giving anything back to the community. So there was a huge backlash. Came back last year, 2015, with the second application, and they included 25 seniors housing units. And which is great that there was that offer being made. It's not enough.
Yeah.
The other intention around the HAHR was that we would be able to have more density and be able to capitalize on some community amenity contributions from rezonings. That has not happened. The level of CACs that the community was expecting did not turn out. Since the passing of that policy, there has only been 22 units of seniors housing, and I think it was $1.5 million, which played out in grants from the City of Vancouver to help restore some of the historic buildings in Chinatown, the clan associations. But that is a drop in the bucket in terms of the need.
The profit that they're making on a property like that.
Absolutely. And so the units in the with the 25 units in the 105 Kiefer proposal are tiny. They're not suitable for seniors, and we don't need 25, we need 250, if not more. There was a UBC study that was done a few years back, so the need is probably greater now, but they did a study saying that at roughly 3,300 Chinese seniors housing units are needed across Vancouver. And that's a huge need. There's not very much culturally appropriate seniors housing available across the city, period. And for me, I would love to see for 105 Kiefer an actual full building with Chinese seniors housing and to have a community amenity, a cultural space so that it's kind of like a community center.
Right.
And, you know, traditional retail, like small storefront businesses. When we start having these giant condos, there's the ground floor is often that they need an anchor tenant. So you get things like the Price Marts, the Whole Foods, the, you know, that kind of stuff. And that draws away from the smaller businesses.
Yeah. So, and smaller businesses, restaurants, mm-hmm. barbecue shops, yeah. I mean, they're under attack constantly, right? I mean, those are moving out of
mm-hmm.
the area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're really important for downtown Eastside residents as well. I think that's been kind of overlooked as well, the role that the traditional Chinese businesses where things are actually affordable, mm-hmm. how they play in a daily life for folks in the neighborhood. Because I work in the downtown Eastside, there's a lot of low-income folks who don't get that much access to protein. And the barbecue meat shops is actually the perfect place. It's cooked, so if you're living in an SRO, mm-hmm. you don't have to have a kitchen to cook it. Mm-hmm. It's tasty. And you can go in and say, I want $2 of barbecue pork or, you know, roast duck or something. And that's how they sell it. You can do that. Whereas if you go to Price Mart or Nestor's, forget it.
Yeah, you're not you need that.
Exactly. So it's a big resource for people.
When you hear stuff like this, Jackie, do you, because I'm sure where you're up at, you know, Kingsway and Joyce area, I mean, mm-hmm. that neighborhood's changing a lot as well.
Yeah.
Do you worry about the city that your kids are going to grow up in? Well, whether they stay in Vancouver? I mean, is that an option at this point?
Even just discussing Chinatown, and like I've had the discussion with Doris before, you know, for me, I was born and raised in Vancouver, East Vancouver particularly, and Chinatown was, Chinatown and East Hastings was a staple for us as a family. Like my mother, we did all of our shopping down there mainly because it was cheaper, and we would come from like Sophia Street in East Van mm-hmm. to go downtown and do most of our shopping in Chinatown.
Yeah.
My mom, she really liked the wicker baskets that they had in the shops, but I mean, even now, when I go down to Chinatown with the kids, it's not what it was when I was younger, you know, or even when I think back to when we were in high school, and I know we spent a lot of time in Chinatown in high school because I was looking for my grad dress. So we were, so I spent a lot of time there, especially in high school. And there were stores you could even go to look for that. Mm-hmm. There is not a lot of that there now. Mm-hmm. So when I go there now with my kids, it's a little devastating to see that the things that I grew up with and that were such staples to me in my childhood growing up in what is very historic Chinatown. There's books written about it, books that we read in elementary school that reference old Chinatown, Vancouver, is not what it was. And it's not what we tried to preserve it to be.
Yeah.
And so it's sad to see that these big shops and these big developers are making, they're essentially seeping into some of the places that we've tried to hold as a city.
Yeah.
We've tried to kind of hold some sanctity to. But
yeah, and it's frightening because it's happening so quickly. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Once it's gone, it's gone.
You can't bring it back.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean, as a conservative, you know, I feel frightened by it, you know, and of just how quickly it can happen. Mm-hmm. One of the arguments, Doris, that they said about gentrification was that it would make that area safer. But it wasn't unsafe to begin with, was it?
It wasn't. And actually, we don't need gentrification to make places safer.
No.
We need to have the right resources. We need to bring people back into the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I often bring up the case of this whole argument that we need more condos, more density to have more people in the neighborhood. Well, if you take the example of Granville Island, there's no residential on Granville Island. Yet hundreds of thousands of people go to Granville Island all the time, tourists and locals, all day long. We need programming. We need activities. We need other things to have. We need to highlight the assets that Chinatown has in order to bring people into the neighborhood. We don't need more condos. People come from all over Vancouver. We have our Mahjong socials. We have people coming from Surrey just to come for 3 hours to play Mahjong with people because it was something to do. It's not enough to just have a place to shop. We actually have to have things to do there as well.
And it's part of Vancouver's history to take a part of the history of a city. It loses the whole meaning of everything, right? I personally don't see Vancouver as Vancouver without our historic Chinatown, right? It's questionable to me as to why our government or even our mayor or somebody wouldn't be putting more money into this.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we're always looking for someone to blame.
Well, and it's not really a blame. It's you're in charge of the city.
Yeah. And so
take care of the city.
Yeah, but I mean, the line is always drawn online. I always see this, that the mayor has certain supporters or certain business interests supporting him and his party. I mean, do we blame those folks, the developers, the Bob Rennies of the world, say?
Actually, it's funny because I just walked past Bob Rennie's office and it was really busy in there.
I'm sure.
He's got his art collection he's showing off.
Yes. I think with Chinatown, it's been a multi-layered issue. I think that there's been some neglect. There's been some misperceptions, some assumptions made of this plan, of this master plan of having condos, and it's not. And I watched the minutes from the AJHR because I wasn't involved during that time, but I remember one specific part where Councillor Jeff Meggs himself said, density does not equal revitalization. Just because you bring in the condos does not mean that it revitalizes the neighborhood. And what does revitalization mean?
Yeah, what exactly does that look like?
So I think it's possible without that kind of intervention. And I think it's been kind of twisted to a point where I think people across Vancouver are starting to panic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because you can't get a house in Vancouver that's less than $1 million. So, I mean...
Oh, it's crazy.
So, I mean, that's ground zero, if you will, in terms of where people will want to come in and boost the value there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, unfortunately, because it is a vulnerable part of town, that's where they can take advantage of it and take advantage of it quickly.
Absolutely.
Do you see hope in the horizon? I know that your group... it's an intergenerational group, so there are people that have been there a long time, and then there are young people like yourself. I mean, it's great work that you all are doing. Do you see light at the end of the tunnel? Do you see hope for that part of town?
I think, when we first started the group, Youth Collaborative for Chinatown, it was the three of us, myself, my sister, and Catherine Lennon. And the 2 years before we started, we kept talking in circles around what can we do, what can we do. We're so concerned and we care about this neighborhood and we want to see it thrive. And the dialogue in the public realm was so negative for so long that we ended up saying, well, why don't we just do something? Because it was just going on this downward trajectory in every way, dialogue, feeling, you know, all these negative feelings. That people didn't care about the neighborhood anymore. The wider public didn't care. They were starting to starting to hear things like, well, you know, Chinatown needs condos, or it's never gonna be saved. It'll never be, you know, it's gonna die, just like every Chinatown around the world. And we really wanted to change that dialogue, and that in itself gave people hope, I think.
Yeah.
Which is why they're all coming to our Mahjong socials.
Yeah, so
and signing the petition.
So those socials, because we've heard about them on the radio, we've seen them on television, we've read about them in the newspaper, that came about from your group because I guess the Chinatown night market, that shut down, did it?
Mm-hmm.
That was 2014?
2013. 2015, maybe. Yeah. I can't remember.
So that right away had a lot of people who would usually go there on the weekend in the spring and summer. They stopped going there because that ended.
Yes.
And so you all decided to have Mahjong, and you're telling us that people from all over the Metro Vancouver area are going there and playing?
Yeah. Yeah, so the last year that the night market was running, Ken Sui and Tanis Ling were the ones who were kind of trying to revive the Chinatown night market because it was pretty much competing with the one in Richmond.
Yeah.
And they wanted to give it a little bit of a more contemporary spin, as well as trying to attract some of the young people just like themselves and like me.
Yeah.
And so he did a whole series of different kinds of activities, and one of them was Mahjong. And that was the night my sister and I attended, and we saw what was happening. It was seniors playing with young people. It was cross-cultural. There were so many people that were just wanting to learn and were fascinated with the game. It was loud. And it's something that every Chinese-Canadian person can relate to. And even if you walk down the streets of Chinatown, you can hear the Mahjong tiles upstairs in the clan associations all the time. And people know immediately what that is. And it forces people to sit around a table, too, to force them to play together. And we talked to Ken last year, and he said that was the most successful activity that we had at the night market. So he said, okay, let's just bring a couple tables and see what happens to the Kiefer Memorial Triangle. And we literally had the three of us, my sister, myself, and Catherine, who... We were just sitting around a Mahjong table with some tiles shuffling, and we were actually going to have a meeting there, but we thought we'd just test it out.
Yeah, yeah.
And the number of people that stopped by and said, what are you doing? Are you playing? Are you, you know, whatever? And so many people stopped by that would normally not. And we knew right away that we had to just, you know, if you build it, they will come, right?
Yeah.
So we had eight tables, and they were completely full. And people were asking us to do it weekly, so we ended up doing it monthly, and every month at least 75 to 150 people come by.
So even this time of year,
absolutely,
you do it inside?
Yep.
And where is it?
So we do it at Kiefer Plaza, downstairs from the Flota restaurant in Chinatown. And our last one was January 30th. I think the last Saturday of every month we're trying. And we had some sponsorship from Hans, which is great that he's been hearing what we're doing and he really supports it. And we've been trying to incorporate some of the businesses and the merchants in the plaza as part of the promotion. So it was like if you buy something from a merchant, you get a free Ningo, you know, like Chinese New Year cake.
Yeah.
And it worked out really, really well. And people got to taste something that was very traditional and got to have fun. There were people who had, we had two or three families that brought, where all three generations were there. And they were all, everybody had something to do and hang
That's
out.
Great. And as a family.
As a family,
and
exactly.
And so I guess the last February of this month is the 27th, there'll be something that day?
Sorry, last
Saturday. Pardon me.
Yes.
So February 27th, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is Mahjong a hard game to play?
No, it's kind of like Rummy.
Okay, so Jackie and I could do it.
Totally.
Yeah.
We have teachers. We have all different.
I'll need a teacher for
sure. We'll have teachers. Yeah, we've had people never touch a Mahjong tile and come every month because they could come and meet other people and play. We've had so many volunteers come out to help as well because they see the change, the shift in the dynamic around Chinatown now.
So I want to ask, as far as sponsorship goes, what kind of sponsorship are you guys typically looking for? Is it always money?
No.
We actually just
won Vancouver Soup, so
that's
been awesome. I think right now we've just been looking for Mahjong tables.
Okay.
Tables. Yeah, Mahjong tables, stools. Stools, like, they're going to start breaking soon. They were saved from the Chinatown night market, so they're and you know, a lot of back and forth, so they're going to start breaking soon, so we'll need new stools. Yeah.
And okay, great.
And,
so
and bodies, people
tables,
going down
stools,
there.
Stools and bodies,
yes,
for yeah. sure.
Bodies and skills, you know, people who just want to get involved and you know, want to shape the programming, or artists, you know, we have art, we have a couple local artists who lead our arts-based activities, so like bookbinding, or for January we did folding red envelopes into fish and and lanterns and stuff. And
you're so good at that too.
Thank you.
The other thing that that in the last couple of months that I had the thought of is what's culturally appropriate. And I know that in your day job, if you will, you deal with food and nutrition in the downtown east side. And you know, it's easy for a lot of people to just donate whatever they've got in their cupboard. And it may not be appropriate for people in that neighborhood. So do you have advice in terms of what people... Because, I mean, we all try to do good and try to help out. But, I mean, there's stuff that people in the... in the downtown east side, people in Chinatown don't really need.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. If you take a tour around the food bank, the Greater Vancouver Food Bank, they have goose liver flavored gum that somebody donated. Like, anyway, I'm not even going to touch that one. But yeah, I think time, and I think a lot of people just think of the first thing that is the easiest, like food, like the can of food that's sitting in your cupboard, and drop it off.
Right.
But I think look for things that you are passionate about. So the volunteers that we have, they've donated a lot of their time and their expertise, their graphic design skills, their walking the streets to poster everywhere, or and we try and find volunteers and partner with folks where the philosophies align and our motives are kind of the same. So so Hans was a great one. And we don't pass out food all the time. And there's a purpose every time we do. So if there's a festival, a Chinese holiday, then we kind of highlight that using the food, or we leverage the sponsorship to be able to have people support the businesses. Things like that.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, what keeps you in that part of the world? I mean, I know that's where you work and the sort, but some people would say, well, you know, you could take your skills and earn a lot more money elsewhere.
What? I don't earn any money in Chinatown.
Yeah. So I mean, that brings up the bigger question. Why stay there? And I mean, you know, you're young, and you could easily do anything with your life, but what keeps you there?
I think there's, well, one, I feel like there aren't very many cultural spaces in Vancouver anymore. And this is one that still has a lot of culture embedded. As well as, you know, being Chinese Canadian, of course. And then also that, my great grandfather didn't, you know, work in the mines or build the railroad, but it was because of the history that existed that has enabled me to be born in Canada. I try not to take that for granted, and the only reason why I'm here is because of my forefathers, if you will, who did that work and fought for the right of Chinese Canadians to vote, to be citizens, and live wherever we want to live. And that is a really humbling thing, I think. And my grandfather, when he came, and when my father came from Hong Kong, he went straight to the Clan Association. And he found a job, and he found housing, and he found his wife. Like, all of these things happened because of the community that was built in the face of discrimination.
Yeah.
Which is a very powerful thing. And if you think about it, it's pretty, like crazy, being that that's just Vancouver's Chinatown. Right. This is, we're talking about all around the world, that Chinese people were discriminated against and seen as cheap labor, and that all these little Chinatowns exist around the world.
And it's, we definitely have to work to preserve them. I think it's so important.
Yeah, and what's admirable is that there are not a lot of people our age who are thinking about those things when we ought to.
Absolutely.
I think we're seeing more and more, like, high school is still a bit young, but we're starting to see people, like, in university in their 20s, 30s, 40s, even 50s, saying, you know, I don't know anything about my cultural heritage. I want to learn that.
Right.
And so hopefully we will be able to expand our programming this summer to be able to incorporate some of the more educational and cultural things. The more educational things and history-based things. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to revive a really successful program that Centre A hosted and did an exhibit. It was kind of like a living exhibit where they did Saturday school. So Catherine, one of the co-founders of Youth Collaborative for Chinatown, had curated this. And it's basically the play on every Chinese Canadian's experience of growing up having to go to Chinese school on Saturday morning. But it was, like, really painful.
Yeah.
And so she wanted to turn it fun, to make it fun and animated. So it was 1 hour structured and taught by Zoe Lam, who is doing her PhD in linguistics and on the Cantonese language. And so she taught Cantonese in the first hour at Centre A, and then everyone went into the community and used it in Chinatown. They went to buy groceries, or they went for dim sum, or they spoke to seniors, and it was great. It was in such high demand, and so we want to bring that back.
Yeah.
We'd love to bring that back, so we're trying to make that happen.
I really appreciate you coming in to tell us about your activities, because, as I said off the top, it is important that we know what's happening, and it's important that we can do our part. Thanks for coming in. All good wishes.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
The website for more, savechinatownheritage.org. Doris Chow joined me in person here in Vancouver. For Jackie Pierre, I'm Joseph Monto.